Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Thank you to everyone out there joining us today. We have an important show for you. We're going to talk about the midterms and some of the outcome here in the wake of that. And we have none other than Professor Kevin McDonald from the Occidental Observer joining us today. Hi, Kevin. Thank you so much for coming on.
Always good to be here, Henrik.
You bet. Thank you, Kevin. You bet. It's always a pleasure having you here. It's, I always value your insight after these major kind of political reshufflings that I think we're going to see now after the midterm elections. What's your initial analysis on the outcome? People said there was record numbers voting. And also, by the way, I must say, I have never seen Silicon Valley tech companies promoting this, the go vote, as much as I've seen this time. I've never seen Hollywood elites even come out in the way that they have. And it's clear to me, although not everyone was outspoken about saying go vote Democrat, that was kind of implicit within the messaging. But what did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, it did feel like a presidential election in a lot of ways. I mean, in terms of turnout, in terms of money, huge money going into this, most of it to the Democrats. The two big donors that I am familiar with were Michael Bloomberg, $110 million in an off-year midterm election, and Tom Steyer, $120 million. These are very wealthy, billionaire, you know, Jewish, very liberal. They hate Trump. And, you know, it's symptomatic. I mean, I'm in Oregon, and they had a ballot initiative on ending the sanctuary city policy that they have here. And it was outspent 20-1, you know, by the people on the left. And they're saying a lot of the money came from Michael Bloomberg. So this is the reality that we're in now. And, of course, the problem that Trump has now is that the House is now being run by the Democrats. I'd hoped that for a different outcome there. I didn't want to see this, certainly, but it's not unexpected. You know, I mean, what happened is a lot of Republicans retired, 45 different House members retired, Republican Party. They didn't want to have to. They anticipated a bloodbath in this election, I think. And a lot of them were, you know, anti-Trump people anyway. I mean, there's so many in the Republican Party that are just sort of not on page. Paul Ryan's the prototypical, I suppose. But yeah, it was there were some bright spots in the Senate, and thank God that was held. I'm still one of these people. I do have hope for the present system that it can work for us. But holding on to the Senate was very important for that, because, you know, in terms of judicial appointments, now possibly a Supreme Court appointment with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that's not going to be on the House. It's going to be on the Senate, and it would be very good. You know, she got injured. She got fell down.
That's right. I was just going to bring it up.
Three ribs. Yep. She may be in critical condition. At her age, 85, a fall like that is a very serious issue.
Yeah. Yep.
And it can make her incapacitated, and she may have to resign. I just don't know what will happen there. But
they try to get her to hang on at least until Trump is out, right?
For another,
they were saying until she was like 90, another 5 years. I don't see that. She's falling asleep. She can't walk properly. They're just trying to. I mean, I jokingly said we're going to see like Weekend at Bernie's. Remember that movie?
It's going to be Weekend at Bernie's. Somebody tweeted that.
Oh, really?
McFeels just tweeted that. He had a Weekend at Bernie's poster, but with Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
That's right. Exactly. Yep.
This is funny.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I remember talking about that a while back. That's what I think we're going to see. But she might be on her way out, which means, what is that then, the third nominee, Trump, or fourth that he will be able to put in there?
It'd be the third one, third. Man. And that's just terrific. Wow. You know, that's the big advantage of having the presidency and the Senate, you know, on page. It's huge. And I'm sure they would appoint this woman from the University of Colorado or Notre Dame, I guess, really very, very conservative. I'm sure it'd be a very good appointment. So, I'm optimistic that things, you know, we haven't lost this game yet. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be very interesting. And we'll see if there's any specific, you know, situation that occurs with Ginsburg. Definitely keep an eye on that. But in terms of the midterms again, obviously the Republicans gained in the Senate, right? So that was a good thing. But how much, you know, these ridiculous accusations, Trump's going to be impeached and yada yada. That's not going to work anyway. They need like 2/3 of the Senate to agree with that. And that's never going to happen. It's just going to be obstructionist. It's just going to be making it more difficult, and nothing is going to get done, right?
Right, and they'll have all these investigations in the House. You've got Schiff being the chair of Judiciary. You've got Nadler, you know, with a very powerful committee post. And they're already talking about they're going to requisition, they're going to submit his tax returns and do all this kind of stuff. It's just going to be one circus after another. But I do think that, you know, that's not going to be all that popular with the public at large to see this happening. So, you know, and I wouldn't count... I would not count Trump out for 2020 at all. No. I do think that, but on the other hand, the big story of our time is importing this new electorate, and that is not stopping. But there'll certainly be more Democrats next election term. They keep doing this. In my view, that this is just illegitimate. You know, politics by importing a new electorate is simply, you know, this is just warfare by nothing other means and pure power politics.
How can the Republicans go along with this, knowing that the newcomers coming in,
right?
They're never going to vote, conservative. Yeah. It's just not going to happen.
They're never going to. They don't hold it. For a while, they had this in the mythology of, Hispanics, Latinos, they're natural conservatives. But nobody believes that anymore. Just look at how they vote. But they, you know, minimally, they want a lot of free stuff. And they want more of their own people up here. People like Jeff Flake, oh, thank God he's out of the party. But there's still a lot of them, in the Republican Party. Paul Ryan was that way. Every time Trump would say something about immigration, Paul Ryan, those are not our core American values and all that. And it was sickening to see it. But
they're talking about tax breaks and, you know, how proud they are of that. While the Republican voters are being replaced by new demographics coming in and yet agreeing with it. Even the Republicans even agreed to a... what was it, the ex-felons to be able to go vote? I think this was in Florida or something like that, meaning that tons of people who obviously would voted for, not for strong laws and order, but for like criminal reform and stuff like that, meaning letting out people prematurely, they would all vote Democrat. So they are just, they're giving way to this new wave of tons of people that's going to vote against them. There's no backbone in the Republicans whatsoever.
There's no backbone at all. They're talking about 1 million people, in my understanding. A quarter of the black male population or something like that were not eligible to vote. Now they are. Well, guess how they're going to vote? Good grief.
Yeah, it's not a secret. You'd think that these people know. I even saw Tucker talking about it the other day of like, you know, replacing a population is going to change, obviously, the way that the people vote. It's a given. But, you know, yet they're here talking about, well, as long as it's done legally, it's fine. I see, you know, the globalists are driving us into a wall at 100 miles per hour. And the Republicans are like, let's go at 50 miles per hour. Let's negotiate the speed which we should drive into this wall.
Right.
That's what it is, you know.
First, it was California. You know, it was solid Republican. Even in the 90s, with Duke Meechian was governor in the 90s. Well, no more. There is no Republican in a statewide office. Then you got Texas, very close. Georgia, very close now. Florida, very close. This is not compute in the very near future. I just don't... I just don't see any path to a Republican president. I was amazed that Trump was able to win. And by the skin of his teeth, you know, and 10,000 votes in Michigan or Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, those states were very close.
Yeah.
Florida, I can't see Florida. If Texas can either go blue next time.
I wonder if the Veritas Project videos helped. I mean, they exposed O'Rourke's whole campaign body, or the, what do they call them again? The field officers, I guess they call them. They were aiding in the caravan that's heading up to America. This is great that they're exposing this kind of stuff. Yeah. And Gillum, what did he win anything? Gillum in Florida, or no? He's out too. I forget.
It's very close, and I think there may be a recount on both.
Oh,
those
really?
Elections.
Okay, because he was the same thing there. Remember?
It was 51-48. I don't think he can recount.
Okay.
But in the Senate race.
I thought it was out. And of course.
In the Senate race, it's too close to.
Right.
They're going to have a recount on that.
But Gillum, as we saw, was tremendous. The staffers were very anti-white, of course. They were talking about this being a Florida a cracker state and things like that. Imagine if anybody on the Republican side would talk about this, about some of the minorities in America. It would be headline news around the world, you know?
He was under investigation for different things, ethical things. It was just amazing that he got as close as he did. But that's demographics. I mean, it's all demographics.
CNN talked about this. We can look at some of the articles here. Women and LGBT candidate makes history in 2018 midterm. So this is the way that the Democrats go. It's total, while the Republicans, again, and many conservatives say, well, identity politics has failed. Clearly it hasn't. This is all identity politics, and they're winning on these things, right?
They're winning. And I don't see how they can lose, frankly. I mean, this is a knockdown strategy. I just don't see how it can be combated because you got so many whites. I mean, the last I saw, 44% of the votes of the Democratic Party are coming from non-whites. Well, that will only increase. But when you got 44% along with all the gay, lesbian, and then just, you know, university professors and other virtue signaling liberals, well, you got a majority, clear majority.
Exactly. And we will, it's going to be very interesting to see how this turns out. But you have the Ocasio-Cortez type, the open democratic socialists that are taking over the party. And of course, we still have the possibility in the House now of Pelosi and the kind of the usual old suspects continuing as Speaker of the House and stuff like that. But they want many of these, the younger guard, they want her out. They want a new, the rainbow wave to take over the Democratic Party. And that's going to come sooner or later.
It's going to come. And it's good probably because then people will see the face of the Democratic Party. You're not going to see white people being the face of it anymore. And I've seen, people on Twitter, these people on the left, they don't want Biden. They don't want Hillary. They don't want Pelosi. They want people of color. They want, outed LGBT people. They want people who are totally represented identity of their, their coalition.
Yep, that's right. It's all about that. It's not about merit. It's not about what they do. What they can, or if they're best able to lead or anything like that. It's solely about what they, in some cases, their skin color. It literally is as shallow as that. In some cases, it's about their sexuality. And it's like, well, but what are these people's merits? How is this country going to be run by these people who are just like, and their only agenda, really, if you think about it, beyond, of course, some fairy tale kindergarten idea that you can have socialism in a 350 million plus country, which is like, again, I've said it before, this does work in like countries like Sweden and Norway and stuff like that at certain lengths. But even there, you run into massive obstacles after like 40, 50 years of that stuff, right? And you have to have a lot of a capitalist system in place, a free market system before that like works up the economic engine to be able to coast through socialism until it's like collapsing. Right. But in this case, it mostly, Kevin, it's an anti-white agenda that many of these candidates run for. Talk about that.
Increasingly obvious that there's an anti-white agenda all the way. And that's it's getting more common in the mainstream media. We've all been aware of these situations. Don Lemon talking about white men is the big problem. Sarah Jong being on the editorial board of the New York Times. Michelle Goldberg talking about, yes, we can replace you. It's very clear what the left wants. This is from the New York Times. This is not some nutty blog guy somewhere saying this. This is establishment. This is elite. It's good that the gloves are coming off. People are getting more aware of it. I just sent you this article from American Thinker. Fascinating. I mean, this guy, this is not, that I, as far as I know, a right-wing publication, really, sort of maybe conservative or something. But just talking about all these examples and talking about the cat is out of the bag. And, I see this as part of a long-term trend, that they're saying this sort of in advance of when they really should, because it's going to make what the predictable effect. I mean, everything I know about psychology, social identity processes, is that when white people, like any other group, if they feel under threat because of their race, they are going to coalesce as a race. They're already doing that implicitly. The Republican Party has become the white person's party. I was actually disappointed and surprised to see that only 54% of whites voted Republican this time. That's way below the usual amount. It's usually 60%, and around there and creeping up. Yeah. So this was a step backward. I didn't understand, at least the one I saw. Maybe there are other estimates, but this article in American Survey you're showing right now, when they say racism on, when he says racism on the rise, he's talking about anti-white racism,
right?
And he's talking about the idea that this unprecedented and this belief that we had. And I was like that back in the 60s, 70s. I did not see all this liberalism as leading to this. It was not going to lead to replacement, and it was going to lead to a fairer society. But what happened is the left, they jettisoned the white working class, and they adopted identity politics as a be-all and end-all of everything. And now what we're seeing is, yes, whites are seen as the enemy. We are seen as the bad guy here. And it's becoming more and more obvious they do want to replace us. But it's going to lead to ethnic warfare. And whites are going to coalesce. I think that you're going to see more and more of that. A lot of the polls actually after 2016 were saying exactly that. Trump voters were concerned about immigration. They were concerned about inroads of diversity in their communities. I mean, so America's so big, that a lot of people can escape this, but that's getting harder and harder to do. You can't escape it very easily anymore.
Exactly, that's true. Now, they had a hashtag called Dems So White, Democrats So White. I want a Democratic Party that looks like me. What I think is interesting with these campaigns, and it's still, Lana and I talked about it here in the recent show that we did, we can worry about it. We couldn't determine if it is a troll or not. It could be, but I'm not sure. But it's not off target for what they would do, right? But it is interesting, though, Kevin, that when we had a society, most of the Western world don't have a society that is exclusively for that ethnic group anymore, for the whites or the Europeans in that society. But when we had that, when the systems that we had represented us in a way that they now want the system to be representative of them, then we did the wrong thing by not allowing them in, right? And allowing them to be part of the discourse or whatever. Do you think that we'll be, when we... Hypothetically, we can't let this happen, but hypothetically, let's say we become minorities in our own countries. Are we going to be granted the minority status favoritism that we have granted to many other minorities out there? Or what's going to happen to us?
No, I don't think so. The hate is not going to stop. The hate we see now is just going to continue. It's going to get worse. I think whites are going to be victimized. I think that these people have chips on their shoulder. It's not like they, really like white people deep down or something like that. They just want us to have fewer of us or something. They really don't like us. You see, that's what I'm saying is there's more and more examples of anti-white hatred in the media. Not only New York Times, it's Huffington Post, Slate, all the liberal venues. And again, on the left, you see a lot of them unhappy with having Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden being the face of the Democratic Party. They want non-whites. They want openly LGBTQ people out there. They want people that look like them. If white people want people to look like them, forget about it. They go nuts. So. There's a very dangerous thing happening here. And, there's a poll not too long ago, 35% of Americans think there will be a civil war in the next 5 years. And, if the Republicans had won hands down last week here on Tuesday, there would have been real anxiety and rioting in the streets. I mean, we already see some unhappiness from the left. But I do think that if Trump wins again in 2020, if the Republicans do really well, which is almost hard to see given the demographic trends, but if it does happen, And you see increased percentages of whites voting for Republicans. I think that there will be violence in the streets in places like Portland, Washington, D.C., New York, San Francisco. You're going to see that. There's going to be disorder. And that's the kind of thing where they're going to have to send in federal troops. You're not going to see the federal troops. Places like Portland, they're not going to have the local police forces do anything. The governor's not going to do anything. They're in favor of that. They've already, they had clashes between the Antifa and the Proud Boy. They don't do a thing about it because the Antifa outnumber them. So they let them fight because they think the left can win.
Well, see what happened in New York, right? The Proud Boys fought back. Now they're like going to jail, some of those guys.
That's
they're fighting back, being attacked. The Charlottesville just debacle just keeps like expanding and just sucking up different people that were there. I don't know everything about all the specific cases and whether someone actually did something, you know, wrong or whatever. But as far as I understood the situation, you know, due to the fact that the police shoved many of these, many on the right into the arms of Antifa and the left wing mob, then the fight broke out and they had to defend themselves. But now people who defended themselves are being hunted and going to jail and stuff like this.
Yeah, that's right. Well, in Charlottesville, the official police report or the city report, they commissioned an independent report and they found, yes, the police just sort of herded them into the Antifa and the Antifa outnumbered them. The Antifa were armed. They attacked them. But then the media just didn't, they highlighted some guy prancing around with a swastika armband. And the same thing in New York. The Proud Boys have a demonstration, a meeting at the Republican Club there, and the Antifa show up. If they hadn't shown up, it would have all been peaceful. But then as soon as that happens, well, there's going to be fights. And the Proud Boys are not going to just stand down. They're a bunch of young guys. They're tough. And so there's going to be fights. But then Governor Cuomo comes out and they blame the Antifa. I mean, they blame the Proud Boys all the way.
Yep.
They're the only ones that are going to get prosecuted.
Yeah, it's like you can't, in our day and age, you can't even defend yourself because they will use that against you. And I mean, this is true for any conflict these days that, someone initiates or acts as an aggressor. And then when someone fights back, they just film that portion and say, he attacked me. You know, this is cowardly. But look at what happened to Tucker at his home in D.C. All these nut jobs showed up and I mean, they didn't really do anything, but it's the point, right? That they show up and like harass people for. I mean, Tucker is like a super mellow guy, you know. It's like his sensible positions. He's not antagonizing, but he's a little edgier on some of the talking.
He is
points,
edgy. He's edgy. So. He talks about this demographic thing.
Yeah.
You know, he just the other night, maybe last night, two nights ago, he's talking about, California used to be Republican. It's not anymore. Texas is going that way. Georgia's going. And he talks about this demographic replacement. When you have different people, you have different voters. And so that's the kind of thing that he doesn't like. I do think that fundamentally he is on board. He knows what he can say and what he can't say. He stays away from some things. But my guy, he's really an important voice in the media. And I don't think he's going to get shut down. He's a tough guy. He's got some money. He can protect his family. I think that he's a real asset on our side, even though he doesn't, he's not on our side officially.
Yeah,
but I
exactly.
think.
Well, Megyn Kelly said this about the mob, I guess, collecting outside of Tucker's house. This has to stop. Who are we? What are we becoming? Tucker Carlson is tough and can handle a lot, but he does not deserve this. His family does not deserve this. It's stomach turning. But it's like, I commented back to that and said, well, what about the people that are actually physically assaulted for having different political views? What about those that can't afford private security or don't live in a gated community or living in a transitional community? And they're beginning to say, you know what? I don't like immigration. We should have a right to vote on these issues. And they are fired.
They're fired.
Their employers cave to the pressure of these nut job mobs out there.
That's right.
Who we should think about. I mean, I sympathize with Tucker, obviously, but he is not in the worst situation here. There's far more people.
Far worse
situations, exactly.
And 2 points. Well, after Charlottesville, what happened was not only the people being charged by various crimes, but these big New York law firms came in and made civil suits, like $1 million against people like Richard Spencer. And, that means you have to defend it, you know. And you've got sympathetic courts and sympathetic judges. So the whole legal system. That's why I'm saying this looking forward to a non-white America is absolutely suicidal for whites, because the courts are not going to be in your favor. They're not going to arrest people. And if they do arrest them, it's going to be the people, they're going to be white people, the protesters. And then they're going to get sued by these big New York law firms who are just doing it pro bono. They're doing it because of their political beliefs. And the other thing, you know, about Tucker Carlson, people on the left have actually said they have no sympathy for Tucker Carlson or his family. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine his wife home alone, 20 people out there banging on the door, actually smashing it in? They crack the door, and then they're screaming out there. They spray paint the signs on their driveway, and she's terrified. But they have no sympathy. This is Matthew Iglesias. You know, he writes for Vox, very well-known intellectual, no sympathy at all. So this is what the future white people who oppose immigration or stand up for anything, much less someone on the alt-right, they have no sympathy. It's like open season.
Yeah, exactly. And just to a personal anecdote, I mean, this happened to my wife when I was in Charlottesville. And you know, again, just for the record, I don't agree with every person that was there, and it's not necessary for me. I didn't even know who all of them were. I was there to actually document the whole thing as a media outlet, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
What happens is, of course, we got our websites hacked. I, you know, my wife was home alone with our baby, and she was giving death threats. You know, our Twitters were being hacked and stuff like this. And again, it's fine for someone like Tucker who has, like, you know, he can afford private security and these kinds of things. And my address was leaked and all these kinds of things. I was terrified for the life of my wife and my child. And it's like, where's the sympathy for people like us? I mean, I'm not there's nowhere where I'm going targeting individuals, even though I'm against immigration and this replacement agenda that we see right now, Kevin. Never have I gone and targeted a specific individual that is a migrant or something like this. I'm talking about the policies that are replacing us. I'm not talking about this specific migrants over here. But this is how they have to view it in the most simplistic, dumbed down, evil terminology that they can, to demonize us, to make sure that they paint us in a bad light as much as possible, so that they can justify how they're treating us. Right?
Oh yeah, this moralistic posturing that we see from these people is just sickening. They will go along with that. And then if the Antifa are charged, as they were after what happened at the inauguration in 2017, in January, they eventually, all the charges are dropped. They don't do anything. Even though they were starting fires, they were breaking windows, they were doing all this stuff, and nothing, there are no consequences. Same in Portland, same in other places where this has happened. Whereas with the Charlottesville, you know, I know there are several people who have huge lawsuits hanging over their heads. And a basis of this lawsuit, so a lot of times, are hurt feelings of people who felt bad about what was being said or something like that. You know, this is just, where are we?
Yeah, where is it going exactly?
Well, civil war is where it's going.
And I
hope it gets there, actually, because I think we almost need that. I don't see any other solution. This demographic tsunami is already in place. If we stop immigration tomorrow, you know, we're going to be outvoted very soon. It's going to be a non-white America. There are already more non-white babies than there are white babies, and they keep pouring into the country. But
I think too that this is why it's so important to them, to even people who notice these things, right? Who just talk about the reality of the trends of where things are going, is that they don't want the majority and the masses to be aware of these things, because then people would be like, oh, wait, you know, wait a second, I'm not a racist, but surely I don't want to be replaced. I don't want my children to grow up as a minority in their own country. I want to make sure that our ancestors that worked hard, no matter what European country it was, that country's handed over to the descendants of those people, right? And if people were be aware of this, it would be a different kind of opposition to it. So they're trying to squash these things as early in the process as they can, so that we won't put up a fight and no resistance. But it's not working for them, Kevin. That's the other thing we should say. It's starting to get out, you know?
They've actually done a study where they had a control group and an experimental group. The experimental group was told about the impending, the fact that whites would be a minority in the fairly near future. And then they found that the experimental group was much more conservative and more white identified on all these issues. You know, in other words, what the media has done in the past, at least, and really in the present, they have minimized this. It has not been a front page story, the impending demographic replacement. You'll see a little article here and there. It's not stressed. Most white people don't know. So in this experiment, they didn't even know this. Most white people are not aware that this is happening. But when they're told it, they become much more white identified. They become upset and they feel threatened. They do not want this. I mean, it was a long history now of white flight. The whites don't want to live around other peoples. They want to live in white communities, like everybody else does, I suppose. This is now happening at a national level. People, and when you have an article in the New York Times, an op-ed by Michelle Goldberg saying, "Yes, we shall replace you." Well, that's taking the cat out of the bag. This is what the game is.
Doesn't leave many question marks at that point.
No, no
what the agenda is done.
No,
and they're getting more and more, you know, it's like it's a what do you call it? It's a kind of a self-reinforcing or like a feedback loop or whatever you want to call it, where the anti-white establishment, they must antagonize, they must push because they hate, you know, us so much, and then we react to that and we become a little bit more protective, a little bit more aware, and then the more we do that, the more they have to pressure and push. And so even if all these conservatives out there, whatever, don't want to think about white identity or they want to try to avoid these issues, their enemies is pushing them in that direction, whether they want it or not, you know?
Whether they want it or not. And I don't think it's a good strategy for them. I think their better strategy was to put it on autopilot, never talk about it.
True.
But hey, it's coming out.
We take what we can get, huh?
Yeah. You know, this Matthew Iglesias guy, you know, he put out a tweet saying he wasn't sympathetic with Carlson's family and said and accused Carlson of racial incitement.
Right.
What has Carlson ever said? What he has said is, you know, is it really true that diversity is a strength? Do we know that? Are we absolutely certain that that's the case? Because if we're not absolutely certain, shouldn't we stop this for a while, see what's happening? And he said, and he is talking about this demographic replacement where different people are different voting. That's all he's done. That's racial incitement. And the reality is that the left is what they're doing with the racial incitement. They're the ones, as I said in the tweet here, you got posted. Left imports a new non-white electorate and goes all in for identity politics.
Yeah.
And then Tucker Carlson questions whether that's a good idea for America. And he has said, you know, is diversity really a strength? Okay. And then they accuse him of non-stop racial incitement. It's outrageous.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are provoking this by importing a new people.
Of course, yeah.
So as I say there, it's all about race now. It's not going to end well. It can't end well.
No,
it's disastrous. And in the big picture, you know, I study Jews, and these Jewish intellectuals have erected these ideal utopian societies where they think Jews will be safe. The first, the big one, of course, was Marxism. You know, we're going to have this classless society. Then they gave up on that after World War II when they saw the working class in Germany voted for Hitler. So now it's this ethnic utopia where we multiculturals bring in all the peoples of the world. And that's going to make this wonderful kumbaya. That's our new utopia here.
I think they're doing it because they know it's going to lead to the destruction, Kevin. I think they're doing it because they want to see the destruction of America. It's a vengeance tactic, like it was in Russia, right? That those who let them in, they just ended up turning on them. And, you know, the country that has helped them out the most, both in terms of, you know, helping out Israel and stuff like that, but even, you know, making many of them tremendously wealthy beyond their wildest dreams, probably in some cases. But they just don't know when to stop. But it's resentment for age-old things, and it's a fear that somehow, you know, America could turn on them any moment and stuff like that, and that kind of creates a kind of a hubris. It seems like they don't know when to stop, right?
Yeah, there's this atavistic fear that America will turn on them. A homogeneous white America will eventually turn on them, just as Germany did. So the solution then is multiculturalism and promoting diversity and stuff like that. But it may not even work out that well for Jews, but it's certainly not going to work out for well for white America.
But the thing is, they can always go to Israel if it
they can always go to Israel.
Get bad enough. That's the thing.
And they're armed to the teeth. They're a world power.
Of course, they have nuclear bombs. We don't have. Where is our replacement country to go to? We don't have one. It's like, sure, Eastern Europe has some countries now that are not like flooded totally with migrants, but it's like we're being demographically replaced in every Western country right now.
Try going back to Sweden, Henrik.
Oh Jesus! I know it's. I'm afraid. I'm afraid of this. I know it's insanity. I mean, I know that it's like. I know that it's so bad that I've said this before that I think it can turn and it can turn pretty drastically.
I hope so.
We're still a majority. There's no reason to give up. You know, anything like this. But it's a mental house at this point, and you know, infrastructure is falling. I read an article the other day that was like. Water pipes in the ground is breaking and streets are cracking open and no one is doing anything because every resource is going towards migration. You know, it's just like total insanity.
Yeah. And there's no housing. You know, when I was there, young people are saying there's no place to live. They're living with their parents or they, you know, stuff like that. It's just crazy.
They don't want them to get out in their own, start families, having children of their own. You know, no, it's retarded. But again, you know, back to the issue of the midterms here a little bit and why they're so happy about what happened here and what this is what this is a signal of, right? They call it the rainbow wave, not the blue wave or red wave here. We're talking about the rainbow wave. And so a lot of these LGBTQ nominees, a lot of women, a lot of minorities and stuff. It's funny because they did mention that was the first, let's see if I can find that article, the first Native American that got into, and I was like, what about Elizabeth Warren? I thought she was the first Native American. You know, it's like, did they drop that now? Yeah, I don't get it. You know? Do you remember she released her DNA results? What do you make of that? That was kind of funny.
She released her DNA results and
didn't prove
great
anything.
Great fanfare.
Didn't prove anything.
People may say, yeah, she's like 99.9% non-Native American, but she's stressing that. Trying to and putting it on her vita, getting her job at Harvard, taking it off as soon as she has tenure. This is so blatantly dishonest. It's just gaming the system. And who knows if this is even a good test? They didn't even use the Native American DNA. They used South American. Well, there's probably some. I just don't know how that would work out. But anyway, it's like way less than 1%. It's like stupid.
Yeah.
But somehow, you know, she got reelected in Massachusetts. She's going to be a candidate probably in 2020. I can only hope that she's too radical for most people. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's definitely heading there. But again, this is the flavor of the Democratic Party. This is what they've chosen. And for Republicans not to recognize that they're using migration as a weapon politically to win. To ensure that there's never going to be a Republican Party in power again, and they have to recognize and see this and say, okay, well, wait a minute, this is not serving our best interest. But again, will they wake up in time? That's the big question here. Will they realize this quick enough? What about some of the new people that are coming into the party? Jeff Sessions just were outed as Attorney General. Matthew Whitaker is a new guy. I know is that the left hates him, so maybe he's good.
He may be good, yeah. Yeah, it could be. Sessions was good as far as immigration goes. I mean, he was tough. But when it came to, you know, he never should have recused himself from the Russia thing. There was no way they could have made him do that. There was very tenuous the reason. And once that happened, Rosenstein just immediately did this. And I always had the feeling that Rosenstein had this planned all along. But, this guy Whitaker, and of course the left is saying, oh, it's unconstitutional and all this stuff, and they're going crazy about it. But I think that will help to have him in charge of this investigation. I think he'll do a better job than Rosenstein, obviously, was very anti-Trump.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. Let me see here. There's a couple of more things we should talk about. The midterms, of course, is a big one. Is there any other takeaways that there was a first? I forget where she was. It was a first Muslim woman as well in Michigan, I guess. Not surprising.
Well, Minnesota as well.
Minnesota as well, really.
Yeah, Minnesota, and at least two of them are very staunch critics of Israel. You know, Palestinian. One of the, I think one of them is Palestinian, and so. And there was an article in the Jewish press that, in general, that these Democrats that were elected were pro-Israel very staunchly. Cory Booker, it was, well, he wasn't reelected this time, but in general, this incoming class was pro-Israel. But there are a couple of them, Palestinians, and I think this woman here maybe also very critical of Israel. So, you know, the Israel lobby has to think about that long term. That, you know, and the Labour Party in the UK is already beholden to the Muslim votes, and they are becoming very anti-Israel. Jeremy Corbyn, very anti-Israel. So who knows what could happen with that, but I don't think the Israel lobby is in any danger anytime soon. And of course, Trump has really, really gone to bat for them. Sadly, sad to see that. I think it's all about Sheldon Adelson and his money.
Yeah, exactly. There's tons of money there in the backdrop. I learned some new things a couple of months back in terms of some people that have bailed him out, you know, during the big recession and stuff like that. Some of the intermediaries of even the Rothschild bankers. And I was like, whoa, shit. You know, so
I was like Winston Churchill back in the 30s.
Exactly. That's right. It's a good analogy.
They bailed him out. They bailed him out, and he came through for him.
Yeah, absolutely. He had nothing left. He had nothing left. And that's how they do it. Financial, control. So, yeah, I mean, you have a little bit of that dilemma then for maybe the APACs, the Israeli lobby in America, that it's like, on one hand, they are, I think, very pro replacing the population in America, but as they do that and as you turn more left, it's an increasing anti-Israeli sentiment. It weaves into that leftism that's coming in and taking over as well. But I think that's they can afford that because they're seeing Israel as as the future seat of world power. That's how I think that they're strategically placing it, right?
I do think that they, how could you not be confident that Israel is one of the biggest military powers in the world? They can take care of themselves. They have missiles aimed everywhere, and they got submarines with nuclear weapons. So they could even strike the United States if they wanted. But, I think that there's that confidence now. But, you know, it does worry them. You know, they're doing a lot of anti the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement is worrying them, that they are concerned about that. They're trying to get this bill through where they would basically make that illegal. Even the ACLU, which has become, has not been good on hate speech, even the ACLU says this is an infringement on free speech. So, the Samson option you have there is a very real phenomenon. If they go down, it's going to be
scorched earth tactic, right? They're not going to go down with anyone. Exactly. And that's what, of course, makes them so dangerous, because there's a desperation and a fear kind of weaved into the creation of Israel, too. In some cases, for good reason, because they've done unscrupulous things. They have occupied and taken land. In some regards, it was given to them by others, of course, like Britain and America has upheld some of these things, vetoes in the United Nations and stuff like that. Yeah. But they're watching their back constantly because they know that they have done this against international law and stuff like that.
Yeah, to be Jewish is to have this sort of bunker mentality that we're always under threat. The next Holocaust is right around the corner. And that, the destruction of Israel can happen at any time. But it's interesting. I think I saw a poll not too long ago in the Democratic Party, about 50% of the Democrats now are not very favorable to Israel. It's becoming a thing, not just on this like Muslim left, just the secular left is becoming anti-Israel. Because, I mean, how can you be pro-Israel and really be a leftist? I mean, you know, they're all talking about multicultural peace and harmony. You got an apartheid state here. You got limits immigration to people that can establish their Jewish credentials, it's ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians, and absolute oppression. What's going on in Gaza? Can you imagine for a second living in Gaza?
Yeah, I know.
Where they boycotted things? Yeah. It's just like,
I can't imagine it. And obviously, you know, and that's also why, of course, why the left is inherently, you know, anti-Israel, because of their treatments and all that kind of stuff. And I certainly, you know, agree with that stance. And then at the same time, I also feel it's also this, the reason why they don't want Israel to treat, you know, anyone like this is because that, you know, they don't want this to legitimize itself to other countries as well, right? What if a European country all of a sudden put their foot down and did what Israel did? They said, let's build a wall. We don't want these immigrants. We're going to actually lobby for them to leave the country. We'll even have, I don't know, lobby groups that go to other countries and helping to bring in illegal immigrants there and things like this, right? So it's about the double standard. Either you allow countries to have self-determination and put their foot down and judge for themselves where they want to go, or you don't have let anyone have it anywhere, right? You can't have both.
You know, there's an interesting divergence between the diaspora and Israel now, because Netanyahu, you know, is a very strong Trump supporter. He's going to Austria soon. He's not condemned the nationalist parties like in Hungary, whereas back in the 90s, I guess it was with when Haider got elected in Austria, they went crazy. They withdrew their ambassador and all that. I think they are seeing nationalism as maybe good for them, whereas in the diaspora in America, most Jews, 75% of the Jews vote Democrat. You know, they're still on the left. They want the replacement of white America and all that. And they're totally opposed to any concept of nationalism. I think, though, that Israel may see its own salvation, not with the left, because the left is becoming so anti-Israel, but they, you know, this hypocrisy can't last forever, where they push their own nationalism, but the replacement of everybody else, and the idea that everybody else's nationalism is something, psychopathology or something. They can't do that forever, I don't think. And a big headline in one of the Jewish newspapers that diaspora Jews are choosing multiculturalism over Israel these days. And I think that because, you know, Trump's been the best friend Israel ever had, way better than Obama. And so, you know, they have to make a choice here. And I think it looks to me like they are, you know, that Israel itself, Netanyahu, nationalist governments, they are, you know, the government of Austria is now quite nationalist. And yet Netanyahu is going there, big reception, all positive and so on. Yeah. I think this is an interesting development.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't like that that allegiance by many of the European nationalist groups that they're Israel. They, in some cases, you see even some of these politicians.
No, I know it's just sucking up.
Yeah, they're like more pro Israeli than they are even their own country in some regards.
Geert Wilder, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You have that the kosher right, you know, the nationalist. Faction in Europe, and although I favor their activities and what they do, why can't they just take their own side and leave international politics to the side? That what we have to take. This is what it bothers me. I guess it's like they're asking us to take a side every time. Like, are you with Israel or the Palestinians? And that seems to be the global division now. When it's like, you know what? I don't take a side. I take my own side and our country's side. You know what I mean?
I think they thought that doing this would help them, that they would get Jewish support, they'd get better media coverage and all that. It never helped. It never did. I saw something, this back a while, but something like after all this posturing by Geert Wilders about how wonderful Israel is, and he's just like a total philo Israel guy. He loves it. Yeah. That something like 2% of Jews voted for his party. You know, I mean, it just doesn't resonate with them. But again, I think Israel, the Likud nationalist government there, they're making other calculations now that they, you know, again, there's a big difference between how they reacted to Haider versus how they're reacting to this Austrian party now that's really talking about restricting immigration and, you know, trying to clamp down on Muslims and putting up border walls. They have borders now in Austria. They are monitored now. They're not going along with the Schengen thing, I guess.
Yeah, so that's great. And look at, Yeah, the Austria was exiting out of the UN Global Compact for migration. Yeah. Hungary is out of that already. They're exiting out of certain
Poland's
agreements.
Poland's not going to sign it.
Nope, exactly. So that's great. They're taking a stand finally, and they're saying no to this stuff. And same thing with any.
Thank God, that's a horrible treaty.
Oh yeah, I know. It's a disaster, and it just keeps the borders wide open. Italy is going to hand over land to those that have three or more kids. Yeah. Great development. Salvini is doing a lot of good things.
Yep. Great development. Yeah, and this Salvini is a terrific, terrific guy, and you really see it happening. Italy's turning around, and he sees, you know, the birth rate is an issue, trying to encourage that, and trying to make it easier to deport illegals. That's starting to turn around.
Yeah, it's a good sign indeed. Hey, there's a couple of actually before we do that, let's just quickly look at the. I don't want to talk about the Acosta thing, but I want to get your take on it anyway because it's so ridiculous. It's such a circus, Kevin. Obviously, Acosta is a hyper annoying guy from CNN. Oh. And why do we even know about this guy? Because he's constantly whining and you know creating a scene of some kind. But it's clear, you know, that he was like. I mean, first of all, I think it's ridiculous that he barely touches her. Like, come on. I mean, it's like
it wasn't assault. Really,
no, of course it's not. But I understand that they're using it because this is how the left have been using it, right? I mean, so what do you make of it?
They're accusing Sanders of doctoring the tape. I don't know. But anyway, this guy, I don't know how many White House press people there are, but he's the only one I could even name. Because he's always in the news, is creating some stir or other. Totally hostile. I don't know why Trump would even call on him, because you know it's going to be this kind of publicity-seeking confrontation. The guy is a total asshole. Jesus.
Yeah, he truly is.
I just can't. And
it's the only thing I think CNN can do to like salvage their not their reputation. That this doesn't help, but I'm saying it's the only thing they can do to remain in the news cycle and relevancy and attention.
Exactly.
You know. Because they're losing.
Yeah, I suppose if you want to read about that, you should go. If you want to see about that, you go on CNN, and they'll probably have a lot of it.
Oh God, yeah, they do their YouTube videos about this, and Acosta is fighting back or whatever. But he lost his hard pass, as they call it, which is great, and I hope. There's been a tremendous attack also on Trump over his comments about the press, right? They're making the comparison that Trump is basically Hitler because Hitler was also anti-free press. And so, you know, he's basically Hitler because he doesn't like these outlets to lie about them. But what about the accountability of some of these press organizations, Kevin? And you know, even on YouTube now, there's been a tremendous crackdown on videos in the wake of the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. They're associating people who talk about migration, talk about Hayas, for example. Or, that's off limits. We spoke about Israel Aid in one of our videos. That was quarantined. Actually, we got a strike for that one, and it was deleted. But there are other ones. That's the take I want to get from you here at the end here of the show, but... What do you make of the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting? And this was a gift to the establishment in a way that they've been able to crack down on dissenting views out there. But what do you make of the shooting and that?
The Pittsburgh, the guy's crazy. And this was the worst possible thing to do. And it's just going to, you could see the outpouring of sympathy and all that. And I hate to see it. The fact is, this guy seems to have been aware about the activities of the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. This is one of those religious faith-based groups that that promotes migration, refugees, and all that. And the fact is, what he had said, there's a lot of truth in it. And I think Jews are very concerned. And in the wake of this, some Jewish writers have said, well, we have advocated these things in America. Peter Beinart, and he actually cited me, said some nasty things about me. But, he acknowledged, this is what we've been doing. And, of course, he says, well, it's because Jews are... ethical people and they love other people and they want more, you know, there's, which
but,
is nonsense.
We don't advocate for it in Israel. We don't talk about that, though. Just avoid that. Yeah, that's fine.
But, yeah, I mean, it's not good for us, but I think it'll blow over. But I think Jews are starting to worry that what they have done could catch up to them. And I think they're also worried that the media is now, just could get back to your previous thing, they're worried about what's happened, that the media is not being taken very seriously by a huge swath of Americans anymore. Movie stars coming out against Trump, nobody cares.
No.
Taylor Swift endorsing a Democrat in Tennessee, nobody cares. You know, and so this elite media, the whole Hollywood star thing, it's not effective as it was. And Trump's been on this from the beginning. I went to a rally back in 2016 before the election. And, you know, he points to the back of the room and says, those people, pointing to the media, they have a cordoned off area. Those people are evil, you know. Yeah, yeah. Just he's been doing this for a long time. Enemy of the people. And they go crazy. But, you know, I think people are more aware. They're more thinking about the media. Is the media trustworthy?
Exactly.
But you look at a front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post, and it's one anti-Trump thing after another.
That's all it is.
It's not even subtle.
Nope. It's all they know what to talk about and how to remain relevant. They've managed though to weave a pretty extensive narrative where basically people who are, to a certain extent, they call it conspiracy theory, but I would just call it conspiracy, that people conspire and they decide things behind locked doors, and this it affects people. That's just a reality. But they've managed to weave kind of that narrative into the anti-immigration narrative and even the terminology and words that you know people like us are using to diagnose what we see as a problem as being off limits. Just as a quick note, listen to this clip here from Samantha Bee talking about what words actually mean. Check this out.
Trump and many other Republicans reacted to the shooting by condemning anti-Semitism. Always nice when we can agree that some hate crimes are bad, but the truth is the Republican Party tolerates anti-Semitism and benefits from it. Mainstream conservatives would never say anything negative about Jewish people outright, but there are other words they use, like coastal elites, globalists, Hollywood liberals, or John Leibowitz. And currently, the biggest, loudest dog whistle is George Soros.
Yeah, so you're talking about George Soros, talking about globalists. It's a code word. I mean, it is true that there is a lot of people who are globalists who are Jewish, but not all globalists are Jewish. Obviously not. I mean, it's the whole EU elite is like most of them, the EU parliaments, they're not Jewish. There are some, but not all of them. But it's this idea, Kevin, that us being able to use these words to describe and diagnose the problems that we see and describe the world, and those are getting more and more off limits, and you have to watch yourself what you say now, and you can't say this on YouTube because now you're like the synagogue shooter, etc. Right? This is how they weave the narrative.
Right.
It's very it's a treacherous forest to navigate. This
this yeah, I just wrote an article. It'll be posted in the next couple of days about exactly that. It's an attempt to shut down discussion using terms like coastal elites, but you know, if you look where the money comes from, it comes from coastal elites, and if you look at Beto O'Rourke or whatever his name is in Texas, his money didn't come from Texans. It came from Hollywood and from New York. And that's code words for Jewish, okay? And it's true. If you look at his campaign money, you would find that for sure. And Hollywood is a code word for Jewish. Soros, everybody knows he's Jewish. And Bloomberg, everybody knows that. Tom Steyer. So when you and that's an attempt to not be able to talk about those things. The word globalist, even. It's outrageous, but at least, you know, you should be able to mention. I haven't posted it yet. This is a great article that you got. We have a book review by Roger Devlin, a book by a professor of government at Patrick Henry College about the criminalization of masculinity. You got to read that. You know, the feminism has just gone off the rails. I mean, I know when feminism started out in the 70s, 60s, you know, it was fine, you know, a lot of good stuff. But now it's just become an anti-male crusade. You are up against it. They can accuse you, no proof needed. They can take away your kids. They can just absolutely nail you. Some very good, it'll make your blood boil and make you kind of worried about the future of men. But a lot of men are probably seeing this kind of stuff and they don't want to get married. Why would you want to get married and have kids when you put yourself in this situation? They talk about women, for example, who would say false things about their ex or husband or soon to be ex-husband, and they'll brag about it. And there'll never any charges about that. They're encouraged to do that by law seminars, encouraged to do that by the legal system. It's just, things are just out of hand,
Yeah, it feels to me, Kevin, that it's, the system is collapsing, the ability for people to mentally even deal with reality and certain things is on the brink of just total collapse. And I see that as a partially a benefit to a certain extent, that the system has gone so sick that eventually at some point is not going to be able to sustain itself, whether that's the upkeep of the infrastructure or whether that's about the economy or the system overall as it functions and stuff like that. And it will, it's just a bunch of kids, basically babies. There's a bunch of babies everywhere. They're running around and demanding that their emotions are fulfilled or whatever it is that they want. But in the long run, that's not going to work. And I think that out of the ashes of that society, or the collapse of that society, hopefully good people can rise up and take responsibility and lift things up again to a proper order. I mean, it is a, there is a rise and fall cycle of not only empires, but of nations, right? And, and that seems to be where we're at right now, that the West is at the almost at the cusp of it just crumbling altogether. The question is, of course, who or what is going to seek its place? Is that going to be China, or who's going to dominate internationally? And are we going to suffer under that global order of another country or another elite? You know,
or can we come back? I'm still hopeful. I haven't given up. I think that we can turn it around. It'll be cataclysmic. It'll be difficult, bloody probably, but it has to be done. And as we have to hope that that can work. I think we've got a long and proud history, and we have conquered the world before. We can do it again, but we have to change course dramatically.
Absolutely, and this is far from over. There's a lot of good
far from over.
A lot of good people out there. A lot of things could change. We're living in a time where both information, but even transportation, production, and all these things are faster and more, to a certain extent, revolutionary than they ever been before. There might be technologies that come available to us. There might be, of course, a collapse of technology as well, which could be a detriment to a lot of people. But I don't know. I still have faith, Kevin, to round this up, that it's at the most difficult hour that we shine the brightest, to a certain extent. You know what I mean? It's the comfort that made us weak and made us malleable and gullible and all these things. And it's when the real hardship kicks in where we are able and capable to do something extraordinary. That's how I see it.
I agree, man.
All right, Kevin, plug the website here, the Occidental Observer.
Yeah, the Occidental Observer. Great articles on there. And this one right now is a must read. I just hope people will read it. Perhaps get the book. It's a free download, but it's a PDF online. It's just something that... I was aware of a lot of this stuff, but I just not quite to the extent this guy really maps out here. A very good piece.
Excellent. And there's of course a lot more on the website, so guys, definitely check it out. A lot of good articles, a lot of good resources, and tons of knowledge on the issues that we've talking about here today. Obviously, Jewish influence, but also on European politics, white identity, and all kinds of interesting things, which are verboten topics that should not be off limits, but they're trying to be criminalized them right now as well. Folks,
I'm glad you have that up there. We're also trying to promote the Occidental Quarterly.
Yeah, exactly. Plug that for us, Ken.
And we have, just last Sunday, we did a program with James Edwards, TOQ Live, where we talked about the journal, talked about... my editorship and a lot of interesting things. It's a great video. TOQLive.com. But we promote that also on Occidental Observer.
Excellent.
That's the video right there.
Yeah, we have that's it right. I haven't had time to look at it yet, but I'm going to. I'm looking forward to it. A lot of good stuff.
We got a lot of good comments on it.
Yeah, excellent. Fantastic. Yeah, folks, so check it out. A lot of good things. And of course, get a copy of the Occidental Quarterly. Best way to support Kevin, but you can donate and stuff like that as well. But thank you for the update, Kevin. Really appreciate it. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk soon again.
Always enjoy it, Harry.
Thank you. All right, thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. Good to have you with us. We're going to be back tomorrow with Flashback Friday, a live show that we do on Fridays, kind of more laid back, not as produced as Weekend Warrior, which we do the following day on Saturday. But so tomorrow, November 9th, we're going to be starting at 6 p.m. Eastern, midnight Central European time. And since we have a strike on our YouTube channel, we cannot live stream to our YouTube channel, so we'll be doing it to Facebook and to our Twitter or Periscope. So go to twitter.com/RedIceTV and follow us there. If you haven't, you can catch the live stream there or on Facebook, which is facebook.com/RedIceCreations. We're also looking into a maybe third option. We'll see if we do it to DLive or stream.me or something like that. We'll keep you guys posted on that. But definitely join us and take part. We have a Streamlabs account set up as well. We want you guys to participate in the show and join in with some super chats. Help support us that way too. It's always great. So join us tomorrow, and then Saturday, Weekend Warrior. It's two good shows lined up. And before we say bye for today, just want to give a plug to our members' website as well. I don't do it enough. Sign up right now at redeyesmembers.com. Get exclusive access to a lot of the content. And of course, you get the whole archives back to 2006, including all the videos and shows that have been censored over the years by YouTube for basically being a little bit too truthful. So make sure that you subscribe at redicemembers.com. Support us. Sign up for a 3-month subscription. Get in there. You get also access to most of the second hours that we do. We have over 1,500 shows. It's probably even more now. We have tons of Weekend Warrior shows, a really well-produced show that we do exclusive for members. And then we do, of course, Flashback Friday. All of that is everything we do is archived on the members' website. So that's really the best place to go if you want to get everything that Red Ice is producing. And it helps us out. So thank you if you're watching this on the members' website. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow with much more. In the meantime, join our Telegram group. Also, subscribe to our backup YouTube channel. We'll have links in the description below. We'll see you later. Bye.